Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry.
Polar bears are the largest bear in the world. They can swim for days. A female polar bear will fast, meaning not eat, for up to 8 months between the time she enters her maternity den and emerges with cubs.
This is Kristen Lydra. As the principal researcher for the Polar Science Center at the University of Washington, she's been in the field tracking, tranquilizing, probing, and researching polar bear populations in Greenland for over a decade.
And polar bears are basically serial killers at any opportunity. Any seal they see, they go for it.
Now, about that, it has long been feared that polar bears are among the species particularly threatened by climate change. And that's because, well, they hunt, or as Lydra put it, they are seal serial killers. And seals tend to hang out on sea ice. But what happens when, with a warming planet, the sea ice melts and disappears faster and faster, and there are fewer and fewer seals to hunt? I talked with Kristen about her newest research paper, which recently made headlines for what it may and may not tell us about polar bears and climate change. And to start off, I asked her to explain why polar bears have become such a symbol of climate change.
We're seeing extensive loss of sea ice in the Arctic with climate warming, and that is a threat to all polar bears. Without sea ice, you really don't have a polar bear. The reason they need that sea ice is they hunt seals that live on the ice, and they basically live off of a diet of fat or blubber from these animals to be able to survive in such a cold environment. And as sea ice declines, this decreases survival for polar bears. It affects their reproduction, it affects their body condition, their ability to have cubs and raise cubs. And part of the reason they've become such a symbol is they've been, you know, largely like an early warning system. And polar bears are showing us that as we continue to warm this globe, there will be repercussions.
So polar bears in this case are canaries.
Yeah, that's one way to say it. Mm-hmm.
Are you out there on the sea ice looking for the polar bears? Are the polar bears wearing radio trackers? What's the methodology?
So we're studying animals that range over huge areas, hundreds and hundreds of miles. And so we have a helicopter and we fly out over the sea ice or the frozen ocean. And we basically start to search for bears. We spot them one of two ways. If you're lucky, you can actually see a small yellow dot on the sea ice, and after a while you realize that's a polar bear. And then we also track them. So we will see their footprints in the snow, and we follow those footprints from the air until we find a bear. And so once we find a bear, we do one of two things. One method is to actually capture the animal, and we shoot a dart into the rump of the bear, which is basically a mobilization agent and a sedative. And so the animal will basically fall asleep on the sea ice. And then we land our helicopter on the sea ice and we can get out. And then we can basically be right up and personal with the bear, taking a suite of samples. We collect fat and blood, and then we'll weigh the bear and basically kind of get a health assessment of the animal. In the case where we cannot capture the animal safely, either for the bear or for us, we will take what's called a remote biopsy. So it's essentially the same thing. We have a different type of gun that we can shoot a small dart, and it just grabs the smallest piece of skin and hair and pops off the bear, and the dart lands on the ice, and then we pick that up, and that gives us a genetic sample.
Talk to us about the findings. What are the key takeaways from this study, and what makes these polar bears different?
We lay out evidence for a previously undocumented and very highly isolated subpopulation of polar bears living in Southeast Greenland. Our results show that these are the most genetically isolated polar bears in the world. And a lot of that has to do with geography. They're kind of bears at the end of the line. You know, they're at the southern extent of their range. They're kind of locked in by the Greenland ice cap and open ocean and a big current. And they have been living in this area for what we think is at least several hundred years. And once we realized these bears were very local, meaning they really don't move very far, we asked ourselves, well, how could you have this population of bears in this area? And, you know, the reason we asked that is the sea ice in Southeast Greenland, the sea ice season is very short. It's on average around 100 sea ice covered days per year for a polar bear to hunt seals. And that's just way too few. I mean, the bears are using that sea ice when it's there, but it's just not long enough for a bear to hunt enough seals and get fat enough to survive a fasting period. And what we could see from our data is that when the sea ice disappears, they actually move deep into the fjords and they are hunting on what we call the glacial melange. And glacial melange is essentially freshwater ice that comes off the Greenland ice sheet.
And the freshwater makes them different in terms of how they're able to hunt relative to this broader conversation you were having about sea ice?
I mean, they use the same techniques to hunt seals on the sea ice as they do on the freshwater ice. It's just that it's uncommon to have access to this freshwater ice. So it basically, like, they're using the same hunting techniques. It's just that they're able to supplement an environment that has a very short sea ice season with this freshwater ice, and that's how they survive down there.
Okay, so these genetically distinct, distant cousin polar bears have this other sort of adaptation with this short season. I feel like I've been hoodwinked and duped a little bit by the headlines that were telling me that polar bears have figured out how to adapt to climate change by hunting on freshwater ice. Are you just telling me these are different bears with different hunting techniques rather than an adaptation of the bears I thought had learned something new?
Yeah, that's a little unfortunate. These bears are just like other polar bears in the Arctic. They just are lucky in that they live in an environment where they have a supplemental type of habitat to use. But these bears are also vulnerable to climate warming. They're also dealing with, you know, the glaciers are retreating, the sea ice is going away. But these bears have basically found a way to hang on in an area that is unique. And we don't see this habitat across most of the Arctic. So most polar bears don't even have this as an option.
So if there's not that particular hope, is there some other kind of hope associated with what you've learned here?
Yeah, I think there's a couple hopeful things. I think first is we've identified a population of polar bears we didn't know about, and they are very genetically unique. And we know that genetic diversity plays a role in conservation. I think the second piece that is hopeful is that with future monitoring, really kind of future studies of these bears, we can learn a lot. We can look at how they continue to persist in this environment over the next few decades and understand really how and where polar bears might be able to hang on in an ice-free Arctic. And when we talk about that as ecologists, it's the word persistence. So where might a species persist when much of their habitat is gone? And it is quite possible that this glacial ice will support small numbers of isolated groups of polar bears, but it's not going to be big numbers of polar bears.
And what about humans? Is there something that can be learned here about adaptation for our species?
Global climate warming is going to affect humans in many different ways. And, you know, we're headed towards 1.5 degrees warming pretty soon here. And I mean, if you care about ecosystems, if you care about humans, if you care about polar bears, climate action is the number one most important thing that we can do.
Kristin Lydra is principal researcher for the Polar Science Center at the University of Washington. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.